Well, that's just a little bit of Castle House Rag. It was composed by James Reese Europe for the dance team Vernon and Irene Castle in about 1914. That's the Europe Society Orchestra we're hearing. Sorry for the bad fidelity, but maybe you can get some idea of the music. I'd like to feature James Reese Europe on an upcoming show, and thanks to listener Mark for suggesting it. But what interests me today is that drum solo on the final chorus. Buddy Gilmore is the drummer, and this is one of the very first improvised drum solos on record. And if you listen closely to the solo, you can hear him varying the standard rhythm of the melody with ragtime syncopations, which was Jim Europe's trademark and his great innovation in jazz. Hello there. Welcome to At the Jazz Band Ball. It's a podcast devoted to early jazz from the 1920s through the 40s. I'm Kevin McLaughlin. Thanks for coming along. Well, this week is part two of what we started last time, which was kind of a survey of drumming, jazz drumming from the 1920s through the 40s. And I'm hoping to bring you some more recordings of just great jazz drummings from this kind of golden era. Chick Webb, Sonny Greer, and maybe some others. So that's what we're about today on At the Jazz Band Ball. Jazz drumming from the 1920s through the 40s, part two. And by the way, Buddy Gilmore was quite a showman. He used a much expanded drum kit than was usual as part of his vaudeville performances, and had a habit of twirling sticks in the air. And maybe you heard those pitched orchestral bells that Buddy Gilmore had as part of his drum kit. Last time we talked about Baby Dodds and Zutie Singleton, who laid the foundations of drum set playing. Well, swing-era drummers like Chick Webb, who we're going to hear from next, built on that foundation and really raised drumming to a finer art. Let's listen now to Chick Webb in a tune extolling his percussive virtues from 1936 called Vote for Mr. Rhythm. We'll hear a very young Ella Fitzgerald in one of her first recordings with the Webb Band on vocals. And listen for Webb, who didn't take a lot of solos, by the way, asserting himself with a couple of nice drum breaks after Ella's couple of choruses.
Soon we'll all be singing of the ice swing. Now when I say vote for Mr. Rhythm, you all know I mean Chick Webb. That's all my friends I came to state, but now listen to a noble candidate. We promise to swing it from now on. Fellow citizens, all right, follow me and vote for Mr. Rhythm Jamboree. Everyone's a friend of his. His campaign slogan is, change your world into a radio. Vote for Mr. Rhythm, let freedom ring, and soon we'll all be singing of the I-Swing.
Ella Fitzgerald getting out the vote for Mr. Rhythm, Mr. Chick Webb there with his band in 1936. Well, Chick Webb, who was born in Baltimore in 1909, was afflicted with spinal bacterial tuberculosis, which ultimately led to his death at age 34. He was short in stature, a humpback, and needed to bolt his bass drum to the floor to make it possible for him to play. Webb's forceful playing and personality made him a favorite among dancers at the Savoy Ballroom, where he really made his mark, and the inspiration for many drummers to follow, including Joe Jones, Gene Krupa, Max Roach, and Buddy Rich. Well, John P. Noonan's piece in Downbeat from 1938 is a valuable reference. It's titled, The Secrets of Chick Webb's Drumming Technique. Noonan says, the outstanding part of Webb's drumming is dynamic control. He's a master of the art of shading on drums. His playing drops to nothing and up to a frenzied roar as the arrangement demands. Well, you can hear Chick Webb's solo style in Liza, subtitled All the Clouds Will Roll Away from 1938. It's a Gershwin Brothers tune and an early arrangement by Benny Carter. One of only two extended drum solos by Webb and his band on record, as recorded in 1938. Here's Liza.
Thank you.
nice playing there from Chick Webb in a tune called Liza. It's a Gershwin Brothers tune, subtitled All the Clouds Will Roll Away from 1938. Featured there was Taft Jordan on trumpet and George Matthews trombone, and of course Chick Webb on the drums. We're listening to Jazz Drummers from the 1920s through the 40s, Part 2, today on At the Jazz Band Ball. I'm Kevin McLaughlin. It's nice to have you along. I want to give a shout-out to the Syncopated Times, which is just an excellent source of historical and current information about jazz. I consult it pretty regularly when putting together these shows. Syncopated Times is the only monthly resource that I know of that focuses on hot jazz, ragtime, and swing music. Each issue includes original feature stories, interviews with current artists, and some pretty interesting history lessons. I think you'll want to check it out. Take a look at syncopatedtimes.com. Well, Sonny Greer is another favorite of mine. He was the great drummer with the Duke Ellington Orchestra for many years, and he created a much-copied drum set during the 30s that included, among other things, two timpani, snare drum, bass drum, xylophone, two gongs, tubular bells, two mounted toms, temple blocks, a floor tom-tom, and several gold-plated cymbals. Sonny Greer later recalled, "When we got into the Cotton Club, presentation became very important. I was a designer for the Leedy Company, and the president had a fabulous set of drums made for me with timpani, chimes, vibraphone, everything. Musicians used to come to the Cotton Club just to see it. The value of it was $3,000, a lot of money at that time. With such equipment, Greer could make every possible drum sound, and at the Cotton Club, he awed the customers, conjuring up tribal warriors, man-eating tigers, and war dancers." William Alexander Sonny Greer was born in Long Branch, New Jersey, on December 13, 1895, according to most sources. Bill Basie was a neighborhood friend, Count Basie. Greer stayed with the orchestra until about 1951, when, after a few arguments with Ellington over Greer's drinking and increasing unreliability, Greer left to join Johnny Hodges' new group. Here's a quirky little number that Ellington wrote to showcase his drummer during the Blanton Webster iteration of the Ellington Band. It's called Jumpin' Pumpkins from 1941. We'll follow that with Drummer's Delight, featuring Sonny Greer in several drum breaks, with a group fronted by Barney Bigard and crowded with Ellingtonians, including Duke himself on piano. It's called Drummer's Delight, 1938, and soloists include Rex Stewart, cornet, Greer on drums, Barney Bigard on clarinet. Here's Sonny Greer in Jumpin' Pumpkins and Drummer's Delight. Thank you. That was a set featuring the drumming of Sonny Greer, Duke Ellington's longtime drummer. We heard Drummer's Delight from 1938, featuring Barney Bigard and his jazzopaters, Rex Stewart, cornet, Juan Tizol, trombone, Barney Bigard, clarinet, and Sonny Greer, drums. And before that, we heard Jumpin' Pumpkins from 1941. It was the Duke Ellington Orchestra, the Blanton-Webster iteration of that group, featuring soloists Duke Ellington, piano, Barney Bigard, clarinet, Harry Carney, Barry Sax, and Sonny Greer, drums. We've been listening to The Great Drummers of Early Jazz, Part 2, today on At the Jazz Band Ball. I'm Kevin McLaughlin. I wanted to take just a minute here to tell you about Old Friends Radio. It's their mission to locate, obtain, digitize, and air classic vintage jazz in order to raise social consciousness via musical edification. There are audio streams and song blurbs, plus video streams of the broadcast booth whenever available. Old Friends Radio plays bebop, blues, big band, jazz, and swing music from 1918 through 1968, and provides the histories behind the music with the hope that by informing ourselves, we'll avoid repeating the mistakes of our collective past. Check out oldfriendsradio.org. You're listening to At the Jazz Band Ball, and today we're listening to jazz drummers from the 1920s through the 40s. We have three rather important drummers to tell you about next, all hailing from the city of Chicago: George Wetling, Davy Tuff, and Gene Krupa. They were all about the same age and had roughly parallel careers, playing in Chicago during the 1920s and then later settling in New York. George Wetling, who lived from 1907 to 1968, went on to work with the big bands of Artie Shaw, Bunny Berrigan, and Paul Whiteman, but he was really at his best with small bands led by Eddie Condon, Muggsy Spanier, and others, and he was really a traditionalist. He was kind of a throwback to traditional style, so what they called Chicago style, which was New Orleans revivalist style. And in these small bands, Wetling demonstrated the art of dynamics and an ability to respond to soloists. He wasn't a big soloist himself, but he knew how to support the other musicians in the band. He modeled his playing on that of Baby Dodds, and Dodds remained Wetling's primary influence throughout his career. Here's a good example from Bud Freeman's trio: Bud Freeman, tenor sax, Jess Stacy, piano, and George Wetling playing drums. And listen for those sort of rim clicks, just like his hero, Baby Dodds. Here's the Bud Freeman Trio, Three Little Words, recorded 1938. Thank you. Three Little Words from 1938. That was the Bud Freeman Trio, anchored by the drummer George Wetling. Now, Dave Tough was famous for several things. One, he was a subtle and versatile drummer who hated to solo also, but played with an intensity that reportedly only Buddy Rich could match. He was an intellectual whose career was sometimes directionless. He wanted to be a writer, but he was also an alcoholic and painfully thin, and those two don't often mix very well, and his body just couldn't stand up to it. He died at age 40. He was a major influence with his use of cymbals and made the first effective use of ride cymbals. We'll hear Jack Teagarden's Big Eight in a tune called Shine from 1940, joined by an all-star recording band, Teagarden trombone, Rex Stewart cornet, Barney Bigard clarinet, Ben Webster tenor sax, and Davy Tough drums. Shine, 1940. Bye. Some sterling work there from the great drummer Davey Tough. Jack Teagarden's Big Eight played Shine from 1940. And Tough was joined by an all-star recording band led by trombonist Jack Teagarden, Rex Stewart cornet, Barney Bigard clarinet, Ben Webster tenor sax, Billy Kyle piano, Brick Flegel guitar, and Billy Taylor Sr. bass. We're going to finish off this trio of Chicagoans with Gene Krupa, who was for a time the most famous drummer in jazz. He was born in 1909 on the south side of Chicago, lived until 1973. His parents were Polish Catholics, and they wanted Gene to go into the priesthood. So he went to parochial schools and attended St. Joseph's College for a year. And then he quit school and began gigging around Chicago, getting a job with the Wolverines, Bix Beiderbecke's old group. Before Gene Krupa, drum solos were a rarity, and the drums were thought of more as a supportive instrument. But with his good looks and colorful playing and personality, Krupa became a matinee idol and changed the image of drummers forever. We can't do without Sing, 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 so we'll hear an excerpt from a movie from 1937 called Hollywood Hotel. And there's a little scene in there where Benny Goodman and his orchestra play Sing, Sing, Sing with Gene Krupa, drums, and Harry James on trumpet. And then after that, we'll hear Drum Boogie from 1941. And this is after Gene Krupa had formed his own band, and it features Irene Day Howard Delaney on vocals.
You hear the rhythm romping. You see the drummer stomping. Drum boogie, drum boogie.
Drum boogie.
It really is a killer. Drum boogie, drum boogie. The drum.
Two good ones from Gene Krupa. That was Gene Krupa and his orchestra in Drum Boogie from 1941, featuring Irene Day, Howard Delaney on vocals. And before that, of course, Sing Sing Sing. That was excerpted from Hollywood Hotel, a film from 1937. And that was the scene with Benny Goodman and his orchestra, featuring Gene Krupa and Harry James. I've got one more drummer to tell you about, the great Papa Joe Jones from the Count Basie Band. But as always, I want to invite you to make some requests, whether it's a tune or two, a theme, or an artist you'd like to see featured. I'm all ears. Please stay within the format, if you would, jazz from the 1920s through the 40s. And if you have a specific recording in mind, make sure it's available either as a link or on disc. You can also rate the show in stars or words on whatever podcast platform you prefer. And I love to see your comments. It's best to contact me on my Substack page, which is kevinmclaughlin.substack.com. Well, Papa Joe Jones, who was born 1911, lived until 1985, anchored the Count Basie Orchestra rhythm section from 1934 to 1948. It was Joe Jones, Count Basie on piano, guitarist Freddie Green, and bassist Walter Page, who were sometimes thought of as the All-American rhythm section. It was just an ideal team. He was born in Chicago, Illinois in 1911. He moved to Alabama, where he learned to play several instruments, including saxophone, piano, and drums, and later joined the Count Basie Band in 1934. He was one of the first drummers to promote the use of brushes on drums, and Papa Joe's use of the hi-hat is legendary. Drummers used to say that Joe Jones made the hi-hats breathe. He also moved the responsibility of timekeeping from the bass drum to the hi-hat cymbal. In contrast to the prevailing jazz drum style of the 40s, exemplified by Gene Krupa, Jones often omitted bass drum playing altogether, and he was known for his prickly temperament, One famous instance of his irritability was in the spring of 1936. During a jam session in Kansas City, a young Charlie Parker was attempting to play an improvised solo, but lost track of the chord changes. Well, it can happen. And as a sign of his contempt, Joe Jones threw a cymbal from his drum kit onto the floor near Parker's feet to get him to leave the stage. All right, let's finish with one from 1973. This is a demonstration record called Drums that Papa Joe did. And each track focused on the techniques and playing characteristics of some great jazz drummers of the past. I thought I'd play you the track where Joe Jones talks about Chick Webb's style. And after that, we'll hear Sent for You Yesterday and Here You Come Today. It's a Count Basie Orchestra classic from 1938. Some solos by Lester Young, tenor sax, Buck Clayton, trumpet, and Jimmy Rushing on vocals. All right, enjoy. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Now, I knew Mr. Chick Webb. I knew the Peoples. And they've often asked me to try to do a Chick Webb. Well, the only thing that I know that I just ran into of a Mr. Chick Webb would be a little thing that I'm not at liberty because I don't have the equipment to do. But I can remember how that he used to make these things. He used to be playing along. And if you get the record, it's in Harlem, Congo, and he plays it thusly. And I'll try to play. Plays a thing that nobody's gotten yet, and it goes like this. And then he did a little simple thing. He said, a very simple ending, but I'd like to see you try to do it. Now, he was a man that was a hunchback, and he took a liability and made an asset out of it. See, because they always spoke of Napoleon, but he became a great man with a hand or whatever. We've had our FDRs, but in the music business, we've had a lot of people that have had some physical ailments that they overcame, like an Art Tatum or a George Shearing or an Al Hiblin, etc.
Yesterday, and here you come today. You can love me, baby, and treat me that way.
Theme play us out, Delta Serenade from Duke Ellington's book. We've been listening to At the Jazz Band Ball, a podcast devoted to early and classic jazz from the 1920s through the 1940s. I'm Kevin McLaughlin, coming to you from Cleveland, Ohio. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.